Well, good morning, everybody. Happy Saturday. You're listening to the Repco Light Home Improvement Show, sponsored by Benjamin Moore. And this week, I've got kind of a special episode planned. You know, most of the time, most weeks, we cover a relatively wide variety of different topics. But this week, I'm playing just a long conversation that I had with Drew Anderson from Harmel Academy of the Trades in Grand Rapids. Now, I know Drew a little bit from church, and when I saw something on his Facebook page recently talking about the importance of the skilled trades, I was super pumped to talk to him about all of that on the show. So today, that's what I've got for you. A long conversation about the value of the trades, about the value and dignity of work, you know, work itself. If you've got young people in your life, you know, whether they're your own kids or maybe nephews and nieces, maybe grandkids, whatever the case, there's a lot of good stuff in this conversation. So with all of that out of the way, let's just jump in. Drew, thanks for being here.
Dan, thanks for having me on. Greatly appreciate it.
Yeah, I'm excited to talk about this. And, you know, you represent a school helping, you know, get men, young men trained. And we're going to get into that. But the conversation that I want to have is actually bigger than just any particular school. I want to really celebrate and dig into the trades and why they matter more than ever, you know, right now. And I guess to get us started, let's just jump in with this. Why are you so passionate about the trades? You know, why do you think this work matters so much?
For me, I mean, it's got a deeper meaning. I come from my great grandfather was a cabinet maker when he came over to the United States. So there's a personal connection there. And in my family, though my grandfather and my father and myself were not directly tradesmen, but we were always men that worked with our hands. And so that was always passed down. And that was just so important. And that's why I'm passionate about it. I also have, you know, three children that right now that I want to pass that on to. And it's just so important right now because, one, we have a crisis of people in the trades, but a crisis in character of work, crisis in the character of men, and people that simply just don't know how to use their hands. And it's really unfortunate because I really think we were made to do that.
Yeah, completely agree. Your great grandfather, he was a cabinet maker and passed the importance of working with his hands, passed that on to your dad. Your dad passed that on to you. As you're growing up, what kind of things were you doing? You know, what kind of little jobs were you tackling?
We had rentals growing up, so we were constantly doing repairs and renovations and working with our hands. So, you know, it would be, you know, school 5 days a week, and then on the weekends it was working on rentals when, you know, we had people move out. Oh yeah. So I mean it was learning all these things, and I look at it just like what a gift that was. And something that I can pass down to my kids. And now being at Harmel, it's got a deeper, I would call even like a deeper spiritual meaning for me. It's not just a means to an end, but it's like, it's the gospel of work that we've been called to do.
Because Harmel is it affiliated with a particular church, or is it, help me understand that a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So we're affiliated with the Catholic Church. We're a men's Catholic trade school. And so, you know, we hit deeply on the trades, and also the humanities, you know, studies of philosophy and literature and theology and the deep spiritual formation of men, because at the end of the day, you know, we kind of see it as we've got a problem with young men, and we definitely think it's at the root of it. It's a spiritual one.
All right. So we'll get into some of that, you know, and I guess what I want to get back to is just the shortage in the trades. You know, we hear about that. You referenced it. How real is that gap? You know, we hear a lot of things. There's always a problem with something. Something is, you know, the bottom is dropping out of everything all the time, it seems like. How real is this problem that we've got in the trades, and what's behind it, do you think?
So I'm just going to shoot out a few numbers. And so the Manufacturing Institute estimates that by 2028, there will be a shortfall of 2.4 million skilled trade workers. And for five retiring baby boomers, only two younger workers are stepping up to replace it. And beyond numbers, like the basic skill levels are just declining. Like plant managers are just lamenting that they struggle to find workers who can even read a measuring tape. I mean, and that's just like, that is a just a crazy problem that we see right now, simply within manufacturing. And we all feel it right now. I mean, you know, try to get a, you know, someone that's working in plumbing and things like that, you're getting waitlisted. And, you know, I think we're feeling it right now.
Oh, absolutely. What do you think's behind it?
Yeah. You know what? I'll be honest with you. I think it's because for decades, we wrongfully shamed the trades as like second class compared to college education. There's nothing wrong with college education. And, you know, and I was at an event with Mike Rowe on the east side of the state at the beginning of this month. And he was talking about when he was in high school, they had this picture of like this college graduate with this bright smiling face on their diploma. And then on it was a tradesman who just looked weary down and disheveled and things like that. So it's something that we've been doing in our society for generations right now. And like, you know, so just young people and particularly young men are just disinterested, disillusioned, and really ill-prepared.
Right. I mean, I know when I was in high school, it certainly wasn't something that was talked about as any kind of positive. You know, if you couldn't cut it in college, you know, there was always this. You know, you could always go and do that, I guess. But like you're just explaining, you know, the marketing that we'd see is the college graduate full of smiles and bright, shiny teeth. And then, you know, the tradesperson just looks weighed down by the weight of the world, right? So who's going to choose that?
Well, and it's the perception, right? And I mean, a lot of times we say perception reflects reality, and I'm sorry, in this way, it doesn't. I mean, I don't know how many college students are smiling over the amounts of debt that they have. And I'm not going to say that going into skilled trades is an easy thing either, but I look at the young men that have just gone through Harmel, and they're starting families. They have no debt. They have fantastic jobs, and they're on a career path development. That's just amazing.
No, incredibly much so, because, you know, I'm on the phone with Drew Anderson from Harmel Academy of the Trades. You guys are located in Grand Rapids, right?
Correct. Right. Yep. Yeah. Right. And actually we're moving to a new location this summer within Grand Rapids, which is really exciting. We can talk about that a little bit later.
Yeah, we'll get to that. So on the phone with Drew. And yeah, what you're talking about, my kid is living. I've got a son who's an electrician apprentice. He's working on journeyman's, you know, taking that test and all of that. But everything you just said, I can attest to. You know, he doesn't have any debt. He's got a vehicle, you know, and that's his debt. And he went straight out of high school into this work. He's got a really nice savings account going. He's making really good money. And yeah, he's socking it away. He's got a future where he's not going to be digging out from underneath, you know, a mountain of debt, because I've got other friends who've got kids who they're talking about. It's monumental how much debt they're going to be digging out of, and how many years they're going to be working just to pay for that. Now, that's not to say that college isn't, like you said, everything you said, college is a path for a group of people. That is the way to go. I went to college, you know, I don't have any problems with that, but this is certainly something that should certainly be considered. The work is needed, the jobs are out there, and they pay well. Right. It's not anything like what I was presented in high school.
Right. And I mean, I'll tell you, like, I mean, we'll talk about this a little bit later too, is the trades have changed, and they're gonna, and you know, we'll talk a little bit later on of just how much they've changed since the time we've been in school. And what the future is looking like. And it's looking really bright right now for trades. But we're in this crisis right now that we've, for decades, we've made it second class, even third class. And we didn't see it as an equal opportunity for people, you know. So
do you think it's coming around? Are we starting to see it turn? I know Mike Rowe, you mentioned him earlier.
Yeah.
He's made a, you know, the last, I don't know how many years, this has really been something he's been driving home. Do you see a change coming?
You know what? I can. I see it with our men at Harmel Academy all the time, but it's going to take a larger change than just like creating trade schools and incentives. Like, and that hits to like a second crisis, like as a crisis of character. And the hiring standard right now, Dan, is just, it's so painfully low. Like, you show up mostly on time, you pass a drug test perhaps, and still employers are still struggling to find workers that meet even like these basic expectations, and like family, church, community, all these pillars of character formation, like they've really weakened, and they're leaving particularly young men, but women as well, without the formation that is necessary for a certain level of excellence. You know, we look at kind of our past, and I think we've become very complacent, and we have this crisis of character. So I'm thinking, like, that's before we're even like, can we solve this thing at the skilled trades? Like, we got to have people see that, like, work is a really good thing. It's not just something that we have to drudge about on. It doesn't mean it's not hard, but it's good.
Mm-hmm. Well, dig into that a little bit. Why is it so good? I mean, there's a million reasons I can say that,
right.
But you're living in this world, you're preaching this message. So,
right. Hey,
run with it a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I mean, for me, just, you know, I'll go into the religious aspect a little bit, but I think it can really speak to everybody, is like, we were made for a purpose. And as a Catholic, like, I believe that we were made for work, you know. Work isn't bad. Work was good, but the pain of sin is like toil and work, right? Like, I'm not going to say every time in work is, oh yeah, it's just amazing. And always remember my dad saying, like, hey, if you love what you do, you'll never work a day in your life. I'm like, well, no, you'll work. But I think it's like, we were made for it. And I think why we're struggling as a society is we fail to see what we were made for. And I think work is just such a good thing, but we live in a society today in which the aspects, the character of work are just not valued. And it's kind of like, I want to apply it to like running, right? Like, I mean, I'm not like the biggest runner. I don't love running. There are other things that I love. But you
I
talk
hate
with
running,
runners.
Drew. I only run if I'm being chased. And even then, I've got to decide if it's worth it.
But you talk about like some of these people, they experience a running high. And you can say like, oh man, like you got some people that were really made for that. I firmly believe that every single person has been made to work. And I don't mean like subservient work or things like that, but like the dignity of work. And that's probably what kind of cultivates this crisis of character in work, is people don't see the dignity in work. Like, you know, we saw the trades as like second class, and it's like, oh, if you're a trash man, like, I mean, how many times, maybe that, I don't know if you heard of this in high school, but like, you know, we'd get jokes from like teachers, you know, people that we look up to, and they're like, oh, you know, if you don't do well, you're going to have to say, you know, would you like fries with that? And it's just like, we've lowered the dignity of work. Every person that's doing a job is doing a great service to our society, and we have to recognize that.
Well, and I think it's so interesting. Yeah. You hinted at, and then you didn't go completely into it, but you said the trash man or whatever. That was literally what – nobody ever said the fries thing to me, but it was always, you're going to have to pick up garbage. You know, if you don't get this figured out and get to college, you're going to end up picking up garbage. Well, thank goodness we've got people that pick up garbage. Right.
Yeah.
I mean, there's still incredible importance and value to that. And, you know, like my kid with the electrical work, you don't always think about that as, you know, dignified work and important work until you need it. And then all of a sudden you realize how important this is and how glad you are that you've got people who take care of all of those things, your furnaces and your car, all of these things. And in fact, what happens to me, I'm assuming it happens to most of us out there, is we didn't think about that work, you know, back when we were making the big career choices and, you know, we went to college or whatever we did. And now I'm thinking, oh my goodness, if I had just figured out how to fix a car, do you realize how much money I would have saved myself? Or if I figured out how to do plumbing, or if I. Now I can do some of those things still, but my kid has specialized in it, and man, he is helping people out left and right, you know? I mean,
right.
And whether he's being paid for it, whether he's bailing my parents out on a weekend or whatever he's doing, he's feeling great about it. Like you said, the dignity of it and the value of it. A weekend where I sit around all weekend long, you know, it's rainy, it's dreary, I'm lazy, whatever it is.
Yeah.
By the end of that weekend, I've sat around. I don't necessarily usually feel very good about myself. The weekends where I've gone out there and I've laid patio blocks or something, I'm sore. I'm completely hunched over because my hands hurt, my back hurts. I'm a mess. But I feel great because I've been out there working. There is something really true about what you're saying.
I'm gonna say, you know, we talk about the runner's high. That's the workman's high. You know, and I think everybody feels that, you know.
Mm-hmm. No, like we talk about painting houses, painting rooms, painting every, you know, that accomplishment. It's not just the accomplishment of what you've made. I mean, that's a big part of it. But just having done the work and knowing that you can accomplish it, that you've figured out whatever it was that you maybe didn't know. You know, that's what my kid's having. That's the thing I love about the trades that I think is completely, it makes me so annoyed, I guess is the right word, with all of the prep that I had in high school and stuff leading up to college. That the idea that the trades, like if you want to learn, you go to college. If you want to just do something, I guess you go into the trades. My kid is learning nonstop. I mean, every single job he goes to, there's something new happening that he's got to figure out and problem solve. His brain is incredibly active, and he's constantly figuring out new things. You're learning all the time, and there's so much value in that.
Well, you know, and Dan, both you and I work, and we learn through our work. And I'm going to do a shameless plug for Repco Light. Is, you know, I've gone into Repco Light, and I love going in there because I'm talking to somebody who's passionate about paint. I can start having a conversation. I can start answering these deeper questions. And this work isn't below or beneath me. Like, it's like I can talk about it. And it's just so great to be with people that are passionate about what is important to me in that moment. In that moment when I'm at Repco Light, like it's about getting the right paint, but it's more than that. It's about doing the job right. Like, I mean, that's why I love like your minutes with Repco Light. Cause I'm like, oh man, next time I'm going to do that. Like, cause a lot of us just like hop into doing the work and then we don't realize
all the
what's really needed to be done. Oh yeah, absolutely.
I think that's a really good point. You know, it's easy sometimes to think about my time in the store. I was working a store at Repco Light for about 10 years. I was going to be a teacher and then a pastor. And then I ended up working in the paint store. And it was easy to think in the beginning that what I was doing was not important work. And yet, as I started to realize, you know, as the years went by, I realized it was important. You know, I'm not just selling you paint. I'm selling you or helping you through a project, helping you through something that you're not familiar with so that you can get to spending time with your family or enjoying your home or whatever. There's a bigger dignity to it. And I just love that aspect of it. Every trade out there, everything that we do, there is dignity in it. You just got to sometimes look a little harder.
Well, yeah. And I would say, I mean, and we're looking beyond the jobs and trades. I mean, any job, there's that great thing of, you know, putting that. And if we see, actually, we have a for our formation for our men, we actually have a part where we talk like throughout our theme of our first year, we have this class called Work as Service. And that's the thing. If we look at our work, not as an ends to a mean, but as what we're called to do, called to serve, it's so much more fulfilling. It's really the work itself is not changing in the tangibles, but like it's the spiritual side of it, how we look at things. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like that can make a huge change. It's like being a parent, you know, I probably do the same things that a lot of other parents do, but man, I love being a father. I love being a husband. And it's not because I'm doing something radically different than other husbands and fathers. I really think it's a mindset. And that's what I think we need to look is we need a mindset change when it comes to the skilled trades, when it comes to work. And I think honestly, the biggest problem, Dan, is we have just these young men that have lost like what their meaning is. And it's really bad. Like we're seeing workforce participation rates among young men are like just collapsing. Like there's just this really aching question that these young men have. And like, they're asking like, why should I care at all?
What is the age when you talk young men, what age are you talking? What constitutes young men?
Yeah. I would go like high school all the way to like men that are hitting like their 30s. At Harmel, we primarily serve men that are post-secondary. So right after high school. Mm-hmm. But you know, honestly, Dan, I mean, you've got kids, I've got kids. It actually starts when they're really young. You know, like how do we talk about work and how do we present work in front of our children? Do we see it as a burden or do we see it as an opportunity to serve? And that's really it. So I think it starts at a very young age, especially for young men.
Well, right. And like you mentioned, you were brought up in it. You were constantly dragged into you guys had the rentals and stuff like that. I know my kids, they all talk about all the different projects that we tackle around the house that they tag along with and help with. And sometimes they did not help very well, but they were there anyway. They have the common, I think it's common. I hope it's common. The story about the flashlight, holding the flashlight, kid can't do it. They, no matter where they aim that thing, it's always wrong. And Andrew was just, my middle kid was just talking the other, probably a couple of weeks ago, just about the stress of being handed the flashlight when we're working on something. Because he knew no matter what I described, he would never figure out the right thing to point it at. Someday he'll have his own kids and they'll aim the flashlight in a million different directions except the right one. And he'll know what I'm talking about. But they were there for the whole thing. They were a part of the process. I guess with that said, let's talk to the parents or young adults maybe that are listening. Parents of the young adults, grandparents, the young adults themselves. Maybe they feel stuck. Maybe it's, like I said, their kid and they hate desk work or whatever. They're wondering if college is the right path. What makes a trade or the trades or any of this a compelling option for them besides some of the things you said?
Well, I think, a lot of young people, young men, they come out of high school and they don't know what they want to do. And I think at least an exploration or hopping into a job, what I like about what we do at Harmel Academy is our first year program is like, it's a full introduction to like 10 different trades. So they're getting like test things out, tease things out. And what I think, because, we have these young men that were like, so squeezed into a classroom, sit at a desk, do this instead of like working with their manual genius, and young women too. But now like they've gotten through the thing and they have no idea what they want to do.
Sure.
So I think, whether that's, coming to a place like Harmel, which I heavily encourage because we focus more than just on the trades aspect. There's the communal aspect. There's the whole human formation aspect. But like for a young person to get into a community which the trades are valued is really important because it gets them thinking in different way, gets them working in different ways. And let's be honest, I think now it's really hard for homeowners, right? For young people to become homeowners right now, we got to work on that in our society. But how many people have their houses own them instead of them owning their houses? And that goes back to like, it's not necessarily having like, I'm not a tradesman by my profession, but my house doesn't own me. I own my house and I'm able to do some pretty general stuff with it, cutting my own lawn, fixing my own lawnmower when it breaks down, doing my own simple electrical or plumbing work, painting. There you go, Repco Light there. Yeah. Those things. And I think at least like exploring or being introduced to a trades, and I've got to make out the appeal for our high schools and our learning institutions. Like, we got to start teaching this in high school, but you know what? It's also putting tools in the hands of parents and saying, don't be afraid. We don't need to do it perfect. Just do something with your kids.
No, I think that's so good. I can't remember. I'm trying to remember an article that I ran into probably 5 years ago, and it was a London area, so across the pond, Drew. And the story, though, was about all these young kids, high school or college age kids. And the article focused on all these different things that they struggled with. Like they took this huge survey, big sample of people, and they had ridiculous numbers of people that didn't quite feel comfortable with crazy things like, dealing with a tripped circuit breaker. And, they didn't know what that meant or switching light bulbs out. And it sounded ridiculous. We at first thought when we ran into the article that it was a joke article. But it wasn't. Wow. It was real data. And some of the jobs that they were unfamiliar with or not comfortable with were, you know, things at least you can kind of wrap your brain around, painting and stuff like that. And but even then, you know, that is hard for me to understand because I guess I've grown up with painting, you know, not just here, but mom painted all the time. And there's not much to it. And there's so many jobs out there that, you know, electrical, things can go wrong.
Right.
You know, and you can have some problems. Plumbing, things can go wrong. I get that. But even then, there's a lot of plumbing things that you can do that are really straightforward that people just aren't comfortable doing. And they call for help on. And you end up paying a huge amount of money to people who come out. You wait, like you said, sometimes because you can't get somebody out there. You know, I had my dryer once, you know, right at the beginning of home ownership, the dryer quit working. And we didn't have money at that point. I mean, like now I roll in the cash, you know. I don't have money now even. But back then I had way less. And trying to get somebody out there, they couldn't come right away. We had a bunch of kids at that point. We needed the dryer. And I thought, forget it. You know, Dad used to fix everything. And I'd watch him. And so I thought, I'm going to look it up. So I'm looking online, looking on YouTube. And I found out a dryer, there's almost nothing going on in the dryer. You know, if the motor part works, there's not a whole lot else in there. I mean, little things that you can fix here and there. And for $13, I figured out what was going on, got the new belt or whatever it was. What an incredible feeling of success. I saved myself that big bill. And it was a doable thing, even though it seemed like a mountain that was big to climb. So, yeah, getting into the trades, even though you get into something that, you know, my kid's in electrical. You know, that's what he does, and that's what he's really comfortable with. But what he finds is that everything else seems accessible now, and he's willing to try and to dig into it. And he learns new tasks and new skills along the way. And when he's got a house, I mean, there's so many things he's going to be able to do to that thing.
Right. And you know where I think it goes back to, Dan? It's that time of holding the flashlight. You know, kids aren't seeing their parents. And whether it's like the parents aren't doing it themselves or the parents are like, oh my gosh, like I can just do it so much faster on my own. Like I don't even know. Like that's part of our job as parents is to form these young people to be adults, not to be efficient children, but to be young, you know, to be capable adults that can do these things. And so, you know, there is appropriate times where, you know, we have them start doing like little things. And, you know, I have a 1 year old, I'll be 2 in August, and he helps empty the dishwasher with his 5 year old and 4 year old siblings. And it is super inefficient. I could do it so much faster.
I know.
But that's not the purpose, though. I know. The purpose, though, is he sees the value and the dignity of work. And he now, less than 2 years old, goes out and seeks to help out with work. And it's like, there we go. Like,
it's so true.
Hit the problem. Yeah.
I think that is probably, you know, nobody said parenting is going to be easy. In fact, most people say it's pretty complicated. And I'm pretty sure that probably the hardest part, one of the hardest parts of parenting is letting them help at their pace. Because for my personality, that's brutal. But I know I've got to let them do it. I've got to let them, you know, cut the lawn in such a way that it just, oh my goodness, guys. Yeah. And then I can walk them through what they need to learn, but I got to let them do it. And that's how they learn. I've got lots of pictures of the kids doing we never had a dishwasher. I never in my whole life have I had a dishwasher. I don't even know what that's like. But
well, the thing is, you've always had dishwashers. It's either been
the
you
joke.
Or your kids, right?
Right.
Those are the dishwashers. Yeah.
And I've got lots of pictures of them sitting at the sink washing dishes with these huge, ridiculous, cheesy grins on their faces because for some reason, it's fun to them. I don't get it. But when they're little, it's fun. Now, that fun fades very quickly once it becomes a job. But they do see that. I think they see the value of it. And maybe even more, not more importantly, but maybe more so, they see the necessity of it. You know, because not everything I do at the, like you, I think you said that earlier, not everything we do is fun. You know, it's not like I love, you know, I get all giggly when it's time to clean the dishes. You know, that's not how I am, but I do know the necessity of it. The kids know the necessity of it. The house needs this to keep running.
And, right? And the goodness of that.
And right. And the value of the clean dishes, the value of an organized place and what all the good things that come from that. Lots and lots of good stuff. At Harmel Academy, you've mentioned it. You've talked about it. You're training young men in the trades with a unique approach. You've kind of hinted at that. Give us a quick snapshot. You know, what's the heart of what you're doing out there?
For sure. Well, I mean, again, I want to talk to, you know, about like, you know, with our kids and like what we can do and what we have at Harmel is a place where these men, and I mean in this in the most honest and genuine way, is a place where they can fail. You talked about that statistic over, you know, over in Europe of, you know, they just feel so much anxiety of doing these small, simple tasks. It's because they haven't learned how to fail and then get back up. And at Harmel, that's what we're forming these young men. We're forming them through the trades so that they apprentice themselves to Jesus Christ, mm-hmm. you know, becoming better husbands and fathers, but also like learning that failure is not the end. Honestly, failure is just the beginning, but then it's working past that. And I think that's where like we talk about the crisis in the skilled trades, the crisis in character, the crisis in meaning is, you know, we stop at the failure and we don't push beyond it. I think that's maybe what we're struggling in our society.
You
today.
Think you see a lot of that, that people that failure, just that's the end of the line. We fail at something and then we ditch and move on to something else. Is that what you're thinking?
Well, yeah. I mean, so, you know, you talked about, you know, being a teacher. I was a teacher once too. And it's just like, you know, you'd see these kids, they get these grades and they just be completely deflated. And it would like, just like set them off spiraling instead of saying, hey, you know what, we can fix this. And probably as as a teacher, I'm thinking like, I don't think I did a good enough job of like where to get to fix this. And my dad, my dad is a tradesman, you know, he's a teacher, but he actually spent 20 years in the Marine Corps as a missile technician. So he was a tradesman, much so. But he had something different when he was teaching. He would let these kids redo the work, retake the test, and like give them like they can build it all the way back up to 90%. I'm like, oh man, I think about so many teachers that are just like, they just let the kids fail and then that's it. Like, that's the end. Nope, you messed up, you're done. It's like, no, that's not it.
Right, but that's so much life. I mean, last week on the show, or a couple weeks ago, I don't know when this interview particular conversation is going to air, but I was talking about wrong colors, you know, painting a living room. I painted a living room, and wasn't sure when I got done if I had the right color. And at the very, you know, we walked through a bunch of things you can do and all of that to work through those situations when you find yourself, if you find yourself in that situation. And at the very end of the show, I was trying to just sum everything up like, okay, you know, worst case scenario, you've got the wrong color, you know, just write it off. You know, this is one of those things where, you know, most of us have projects. I would say almost all of us have projects that we tackle that we mess up, we fail, we have to redo them. You know, it's mm-hmm. not the way we wanted. This might be yours, you know, that particular color thing. It might be mine. I might need to just buy into, I've got to repaint that one and move on. I'll learn my lessons and move on. That is life, is just nonstop failing at something, figuring out why you failed at it, or not succeeding as well as you wanted to, figuring out what went wrong, where you dropped the ball, learning from that and moving on. And yet I know for a fact, everything you're saying is true, that people get frozen by the idea of failing. And sometimes they're frozen so badly, they don't even start something because they're afraid they're not going to be able to take it to the hoop or whatever, you know, sports analogy you want to make. And yet that's just so unrealistic in most things.
Yeah.
We have to fail. That's how we grow, how we learn, how we pick ourselves up and keep moving.
We can't let the perfect or the ideal be the enemy of the good. And we do that so much because we have this idea like it's either perfection or nothing. It's just like, what have we built? It's like, no, like we go and we build, we continue to build. I mean that, and when we persevere and we push through, it's, you know, and think it, if you just fail in the small ways, in the bigger ways, you're going to be just fine.
Mm-hmm.
You know, cause you'll reiterate. Those, you know, Harmel Academy has been around for 5 years, And you know, we haven't done everything perfectly. We've actually learned a lot from our mistakes, but we keep on going and we keep on reiterating. And I think that's we've actually come up with something pretty amazing because we didn't stop.
Well,
we kept on going.
Right. And I do think that's really completely true where you run into it. Sometimes it's the failures that end up producing, you know, after we go through the work of dealing with that failure and adjusting to it, we end up with a better result than we might have had right from the bat, you know, right off the bat with our original plan, you know. So mm-hmm. failure shouldn't be something that we freak out about and run away from. So let's say somebody listening is, you know, pumped up, inspired, or curious. They want to dip their toes into the trades or just learn enough to tackle some projects at home. Just, you know, you can't run them through a whole game plan for life. But what's one practical step they could take today?
Well, I mean, if they're gonna paint, I mean, Met with Repcolite is where I would start.
Yeah, there you go. There you go.
You know,
you know how to do this. You've done these kinds of things before.
Yeah, there you go. A little shameless pitch in there. But I mean, but seriously though, no, it's picking up these little things and it's starting small. I think people really, we talk about that failure. It's like, because people try to do like this big colossal thing and they're going to fail and they're going to fail hard. It's like, okay, start out with something small. You know, if you don't know how to drive a nail or screw a screw, like, you know, just practice. And part of the problem that we have, Dan, is like people are not connected with each other. Like, talk with somebody that's just a little bit of a level up ahead of you and see if you can offer a hand or just learn or just do something. I mean, YouTube's phenomenal, but even then it's like, all right, get the right size project. You know, for me, Dan, like I hadn't had a lot of like my father-in-law, he's a total gearhead. He's actually a tradesman. Mm-hmm. You know, he did a lot of stuff within manufacturing, but he loves cars. I mean, and he's so good with them. And for early on in my wife and I's marriage, I would hand off the car to him and his buddy who's a mechanic and they'd take care of it and be great. And now I'm seeing, wait a second, I'm not going to be able to teach my kids some of these things. So I need to hop in there and do these things. So it's just one is connecting with someone that knows something and build up a great relationship. So I'd start with connecting with a human being. That is probably the best thing I think can happen.
No, I really like that. And, you know, specialty stores, I mean, if you don't even have somebody in your life, specialty stores that really specialize in whatever they're doing, there's people there who know what they're talking about, you know?
And they care.
They care about it. But find those people because, you know, sometimes, I don't know, it depends on the personality. Some people don't think about it. I always think, oh, this is going to be intrusive. They're not going to want me around, you know? It's going to be annoying to have me sitting there watching everything. Most of my experiences with people who know how to do stuff and you express an interest in learning it, they're very excited to share the info.
Oh yeah.
It's near and dear to their heart. I'm assuming that your father-in-law doesn't get annoyed at the thought of you hanging around. He's probably excited to show you all these different cool things that he knows and you pick it up along the way.
Yeah, it's real. I mean, we have so like every Monday night we actually have like our family dinner, and so like my in-laws come and my sister-in-law comes over and my wife's grandmother comes over. They're all from this area, and I love it because like I can say, hey Randy, hop into the garage with me. Like I want to ask you this question, or hey, hop outside, and it's such good for like our relationship. I mean, I love my father-in-law. Like I think about some people that they hate their in-laws. I'm like, that really sucks for you because I love my in-laws. Yeah.
Well, he's fixing your cars. He's showing you all this stuff. And
he's showing me.
You connect too.
Yeah. And I think that's probably maybe where we see this crisis is everybody wants to just, you know, they want to kind of stick with their own generation. I think like intergenerational part too. That's part of it is, you know, and not to say that – you know, I've learned, you know, Dan, you know me, I worked in a church before, and I learned so much from the young adults that I would be with and I'd mentor. I took so much from them and they took a lot from me. So that's that relationship is really key and crucial.
No, right. And it's all across all different generations, because like my kid, like I said, he's got all this electrical knowledge and it's amazing what he's picked up and what he's comfortable doing. He's talking about his buddies at work and they're drywalling house, you know, they're buying houses up, you know, and drywalling them and all these things that they know how to do that they're really comfortable doing. You know, I know how to drywall. I know how to do that. But I'm blown away that people that age know way more than I've picked up over the years of doing it. So if I want to get some tips and tricks, I don't have to necessarily go find somebody older than me. I can actually, no. I mean, it's across all different generations. I can go find those younger guys and oh my goodness, the stuff they know.
Oh and yeah.
It's amazing. I just connect with people. I think that's really smart. Last thing I got for you is where do you see trades, you know, everything heading in the next decade or so? You know, what do you see coming? Do you think we're going to round the corner on this thing or is it going to get worse before it gets better?
You know, I think it's going to get a little worse before it gets better. But I am an optimist, so I think I'm optimistic. Like, you know, we're going to rise to the occasion. And I mean, right now we're in the midst of a lot of things going on in the world, but one of them is a strong desire for people to see manufacturing returning back to the United States. Across the aisles, across political spectrums, these things, like, people want to see this. And so that is really exciting. And I alluded to earlier, like, the trades now were not necessarily like the trades back then. Like, some of these shops that I go into, I mean, Dan, it is just wow. Like, it is incredible. Mm. The technology,
sure,
that's being used and the knowledge and the infrastructure and things like that. So it's the trades are not that, like, when Mike Rowe would talk about, like, you know, a guy that's just down on his luck and, well, I guess I'll just do the trade. No, actually the trades are, I mean, you talk about it, like, that is where we're going to see a lot of investment go towards. And I see that within the next decade. So I would tell people, hop on the train right now. Harmel Academy, we still focus on it. We have a second year program that's geared towards manufacturing, and man, that what these guys learn and what they're able to do in the shops that they're in, I mean, it is incredible. You know, and it's just, it really is exciting. But even within, like, plumbing, electrical, these things like that, I mean, it is fascinating to see the tools and technology that is using. It is so cool. Like, yeah, it's so cool.
It's amazing where things are going. It's really positive. It's really hopeful. And yeah, definitely if you're, you know, on the fence, you know, you're a young person on the fence, thinking about college, thinking about, you know, the trades, which one, dig into it a little bit, do some digging.
Yeah.
And just realize the jobs are out there. I mean, they are just clamoring for work. The money is good. And there's such a value to working with your hands and, you know, helping people, because a lot of these trades, you are directly helping people, you know, live their lives in a better way. You know, homeowners, you're fixing their plumbing. When my toilet's plugged, nobody's living a happy life at that moment. Or no. When the hot water heater isn't working, or, you know, there's a lot of misery. And when you can come through and fix those things, you know, Harmel, if people want to, you know, go online, look for more information, how's the best way to contact you guys?
Yeah, absolutely. And I told you, we have some exciting news. We're, you know, we've been around for 5 years and we're excited for the next five. We're actually moving. We just signed a lease with Aquinas College. So we're going to be on the east side of their campus, operating out of what used to be the old Minor Seminary for the Diocese of Grand Rapids, which is really cool. Like, we kind of see that formation kind of coming full circle.
Yeah.
But yeah, we're moving over this summer. A great place to connect with us is at HarmelAcademy.org, and they can kind of see, you know, what we're doing and this exciting move that we're doing, and being a part of that, we also have events and things like that where people can be a part of it. You know, it is about these guys, these young men,
sure,
but, you know, lectures and opportunities for people to be a part of and kind of dive into work. And we're excited for the next 5 years because we've been really focusing on these men. You talk about what's exciting in the next 10 years in trades. We started out with six men, mm-hmm, 5 years ago.
Oh, wow.
We have formed over 60 men and we have 30 men coming to Harmel next year. So that's super exciting. So we want a lot of people to be a part of this move and move with us as we start this new chapter. But yeah, harmelacademy.org is a great place to see what we're doing and all the good work that we're doing here in Grand Rapids.
I'll put links to that in our show notes and all of that. And yeah, you guys are one of all these other places where people can learn more about the trades, jump in, you know, even, you know, whatever you need to do, talk to some plumbers. I've had some plumbers on the show once where I asked, how do you get started? And they said, just stop out, talk to us about apprenticeship, and they'll walk you through what that would look like. And whatever you've got to do, dig into it. Like I said, I'll put links to Harmel in the show notes and people can check it out. Drew, thanks so much for hanging out with me, taking all this time to talk about something so important.
Yeah, Dan, thank you very much. We appreciate it. And we appreciate Repco Alight and this opportunity to talk about what Harmel is doing and how we're trying to make an impact in the trades, but in work and especially in the lives of young men.
Excellent. I appreciate it. And that's going to do it. Whatever you've got planned this weekend, make sure paint's a part of it. I do want to highlight the fact that right now we've got basically a deck coating sale going on. So if you've got to do your deck this summer yet, we've got all the products that you're going to need on sale. Benjamin Morris Woodlux is on sale for 20% off, and Repco Alight's Deck and Dock Wood Protector, our premium go-to product for decks. We've got a water-based version and our traditional, you know, VOC-compliant oil-based version. Both of those are on sale. The lowest price I think we've ever sold them at. I guess I'm not technically sure of that. If it's not the lowest price, it's really close. I'm going to be talking about decks next week on the show. I'm going to walk you through what a deck project looks like, and we'll cover everything you need to know. In the meantime, just be aware, deck products are on sale at Repco Alight until June 16. So you've got time to take advantage of that. All right, have a great weekend, everybody, and I'll see you next week. I'm Dan Hansen. Thanks for listening.